Welcome to the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Kennedy, and you tune in today because you're sick of trying every fad diet under the sun and training yourself into the ground without seeing any results. That's why I'm here, to share the most effective ways to eat and train for sustainable and real results. What's up, guys? Welcome back to this week's episode of the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast. And it's been a reoccurring theme over the last couple of weeks, but we've got a former guest back on the show. I'm actually in his new gym up here in Sydney. Nick Cheadle, welcome to the show, brother.
Thank you, mate. Appreciate you having me on again.
Yeah.
It's been a little while.
It's been a long while, actually. Yeah, you were probably first 12 months, I reckon.
And how long have you been going for now?
3 years, nearly.
It's impressive, mate.
Yeah, consistency.
Well,
consistency.
Well, I appreciate you having me back on. I assume it's a good thing. Not to chase me down for a crap first.
Yeah, I couldn't find anyone else, so I just thought, I'm in Sydney, I guess I'll see anyone I know. Guys, so if you haven't listened to the first episode I did with Nick, I'll make sure that I've got the link to that in the show notes. But what we're going to do today is basically just kind of talk a bit of smack, really. There is a few topics I want to cover, being kind of how to get into more of a structured training program in the gym if you're going from just fucking around, basically, or just starting out with some strength training stuff. And I also want to chat to Nick about how he transitioned from more of a hypertrophy and strength-based training style to now probably a little bit more powerlifting. I know you do a bit of both, but let's have a chat about that. So firstly, for those that are listening at the moment that have maybe a year, six months, 2 years experience in the gym, but are now wanting to take it a little bit more seriously, when you were at that point, what did you kind of do, or what would you recommend in regards to how you would set up a program over the span of a week, whether it be training everything twice per week, once per week? What have you had the best experience with?
When it comes to programming, I typically recommend three things, and those three things are frequency. So looking at ideally training major muscle groups, main lifts, a couple of times per week, if possible.
Yep.
Whether that be, 3, 4, 5, or 6 days per week, whatever it is you're looking to commit to, which leads me on to the next thing, is obviously commit to a sustainable training program. So if you simply don't have the capacity to train 6 days a week, no dramas. Don't try and train 6 days a week.
Because
whilst you might be able to do that for a week or two, chances are you're probably not going to be able to do that for the next 3 months, 3 years, 30 years, and actually make some decent progress. Within that, obviously, we also want to make sure that we're doing stuff that we enjoy.
Right? Yeah.
So when it comes to sort of exercise selection and the way you set up your training program, make sure whilst you obviously do get plenty of stuff in there that you might think you need, get some stuff in there that you want as well. If you want to get bigger arms, for instance, make sure you throw plenty of arm isolation stuff in there to actually keep you interested and give you something to look forward to when you set foot in the gym. So I guess when it comes to sort of creating a program, first things first, look at how much you can commit to each week. If you can train 3 days a week, 4 days a week, 5 days a week, brilliant. If you're not sure, start low and work your way up from there, simply so you can stay consistent in the short term and actually look at creating some consistency over time. From there, that typically will let you sort of figure out how to incorporate that frequency-based protocol, simply because when you train 3 days a week, there's really only a number of ways that you can go about training everything twice a week. Whereas when you start to look at training 4, 5, 6 days a week, maybe you can have some more fun within that training program in order to achieve that higher frequency protocol.
Mm, for sure. And especially with those first 2 points there, like, to be honest, the characteristics are very similar, if not the same, as when we talk about flexible dieting and nutrition and macros and shit like that. If it's not
100%
sustainable, or it's not flexible enough and fit around your lifestyle, then you're not going to stick to it. And it's no different with training.
Yeah,
it's just logical.
100%, isn't it? Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if you fill your program full of stuff that you actually hate doing, then that's not going to be much fun.
Yeah, exactly right.
Like, I hate conventional deadlifts. Makes me feel like I'm training my spine, and don't really like that feeling. Yeah. So I don't do them.
Don't do them. Yeah,
I do sumo instead.
Yeah.
Some things like that you can get a workaround, but for the most part, pick things you enjoy, pick things that you can get better at over time.
Mm.
And then obviously look at once you've created that program, how you can look at getting better at performing it over time and incorporating things like progressive overload.
Yeah, and I often talk about how things like, especially your compound movements, are just like any other skill. They take time and practice, and takes doing them fucking well. over time, to actually improve them, just like you would learning the guitar or playing the drums or...
Absolutely, and that's another argument for frequency-based training, right?
Yeah.
Because then instead of just training those main lifts once a week,
yeah,
all of a sudden we're looking at getting them in twice a week. Mm. And over the course of a year, all of a sudden you're hitting them 100 times a week, 100 yeah. times a year, rather than 50 times a year.
Yeah.
And over time, those sorts of little things add up.
Yeah, you fucking hope you're not doing 100 times a week.
Not 100 times a week, no.
Now, in your experience, like this is a pretty open-ended question and there's really no one definitive answer, I guess, but in your experience, what have you found most beneficial in terms of hypertrophy in regards to how you periodize your week or your months in terms of rep ranges? Because like you see a lot of people in the gym that even that have been training for a long period of time come in, do the same lifts, three sets, 10-12 reps, and wonder why their lifts are basically the same year in, year out, or making very small, if any, increases at all.
Yeah, absolutely. This actually, I guess, sort of leads into how I got into sort of more strength-based training than even powerlifting after that. But I guess early on in the piece, I ran a program called Smolov, which you may have heard of, which is not, I wouldn't highly recommend that program. It was pretty brutal.
Yeah.
It isn't overly intelligent in terms of the way that it's structured. It's, you know, squatting 4 days a week. At the time, I had a shoulder injury, so it seemed like a good idea.
Yeah.
I wasn't overly educated at the time, but I ran it and I made some pretty reasonable squat gains at the time. But the cool thing about that program was that it had varying intensities, rep ranges, loads, you know, different amounts of sets every single workout.
Yeah.
And that sort of got me curious as to how you might go about setting up your own training program with that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Which then led me into daily undulating periodization.
Yeah.
And even today, that is still the sort of thing that I incorporate into my own clients' training programs. Mm. So to answer your question more specifically, I guess I look at varying rep ranges throughout the course of a week. So whether you look at doing that in terms of having sort of one heavier day and one lighter day in order to sort of incorporate more strength-based rep ranges and then more hypertrophy-based rep ranges, or even look at, you know, one sort of moderate rep range, so around that 6 to 8 to 10 mark, and then another really high one if sort of building muscle is more where you're at. Then the good thing about doing that is that you can obviously hit different types of muscle fibers different days, but also look at getting stronger, which is going to help you get bigger, which is going to help you get stronger, which is going to help,
I reckon that's something that a lot of people struggle with. It's definitely something that before I got educated on it, that I was just like, fuck, there's no chance I'm lifting 6 to 8 reps. So I'm like, I want to build muscle, I want to like get shredded and look jacked. Whereas a lot of people, even though for you and me now, it makes a lot of sense and it's like a no-brainer.
Yeah.
But a lot of people look at something like, say, even say 5 reps, between 5 and 8 reps, and go, that's not like my goal. Like, I don't want to lift heavy. It's not going to make any difference. Or the set's way shorter, so I don't feel like I'm working hard enough and all that type of stuff. But as you've just mentioned, like, the stronger you get on those rep ranges, the more load you're going to be able to lift for the higher rep ranges as well. And over time, it's more volume. And
exactly right. And I think that's the big thing, right? It's, it's all about volume.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, the way that you manipulate that volume in terms of the sorts of percentage of loads that you're hitting is going to sort of impact whether you build, you know, predominantly strength or muscle. But overall, if you are looking at increasing volume over time, whichever way you go about that, it's more often than not going to lead to strength and hypertrophy gains.
Yeah.
So, you know, with that in mind, one tends to complement the other. In regards to get better at one, the other one's going to go up too. Simply as a consequence of getting through more volume over time.
Correct. But in saying that, as you've just mentioned, it's hard to do that if you're sticking to that one rep range over again. So if you're always doing sets of 10 to 12, then the chances 100%. Are you're not going to get that much stronger.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, unless, you know, you're manipulating volume in some other way.
Yeah.
You know, you're adding additional tempo, you're doing extra sets.
Yeah, 100%.
Know, but it's definitely the more difficult, the tedious way of going about it. I mean, 3x10 every time you go to the gym, that sounds pretty boring.
Fucking boring, and if your trainer takes you through that shit, then maybe it might be time to look for a new one.
Yeah, I think it was probably time for a new one yesterday.
Yeah, probably. So for someone that might be following a program where they're hitting each muscle group twice per week, let's just say for the sake of it, say 6 day split, they're doing push-pull legs twice.
Right.
Do you recommend doing the same compound lift for both push days, both pull days, both leg days, or do you like change it up? For example, like, would you do on both push days, you do your favorite lift at the moment, is it incline dumbbell press, would you do that twice, or do you have a dumbbell one day, a barbell the next, or a flat one day, incline the next? Same with the legs. But
I think there's arguments for and against, really.
For and against, yeah.
I personally like to, I mean, it really depends, you know, on what the goal is, and then you can also apply things like personal preference. But if you are, you know, I guess more down that powerlifting route, it probably makes more sense to have more specificity in that regard. Whereas if you're just looking at straight building muscle, then you probably want to think about the movements that are going to contribute most to building muscle. So with that in mind, you know, you could definitely do something like hitting the main lifts once and then hitting a variation of the main lifts the second time in more of a hypertrophy style base. So, you know, maybe supplementing a heavier bench press earlier in the week with a lighter incline dumbbell bench for, you know, your 3 by 10 to 12 or something like that. Then you could do like a squat with a tempo squat and then a deadlift with a pause deadlift, something like that, just to keep things interesting and get a little bit more variety in there that you can still track and manipulate over time.
Yeah. And with the daily undulating periodization, have you found that you need to take a deload week more often, less often, compared to when you were following something that's a bit more kind of, let's say, for example, more linear over the span of months instead of up and down during a week?
I guess it depends on how closely you want to look at your training and track your progress.
Yeah.
If you're simply going to sit down and say, I'm going to do 10 weeks of training and this is the way I'm going to follow it, that, you know, might cause some concern later on down the track. But if you're one of those people that can look at manipulating volume over time and maybe you're feeling pretty beat up one week, it might be a good option to sort of tweak those deloads or when they happen, just to make sure that you are consistently progressing. With that in mind, I tend to incorporate deloads more frequently than not, and then consider that deload volume as part of the equation, just to make sure that we're trying to stay away from failure as much as possible, so that we can consistently increase without pushing people to a point where they feel they're going to break down.
And that was probably something I found when I, because I actually first started trying that DUP stuff with you, and that was the thing that I found initially, especially at the initial few weeks. You walk out of the gym, you're going, fuck, have I done it anywhere near enough?
100%, man.
And that's a hard 100%. Thing to get around initially.
And it's like, it's really like one of the only times that I've ever told people, like, trust in the process. Because I think that's such a wank of a thing to say. Like, oh, just trust in the process. Like, that's spoken by someone that has no fucking idea what they're talking about, right?
And they're wondering why they're not seeing results.
But, you know, in the case of DUP, I was exactly the same. The first proper DUP program I ever ran was after Smolov, sort of sparked my interest. I was working with Lane Norton at the time. And he, you know, he was big into the compound lifts and writing those sorts of programs too. So I just said, hey, would you, you know, mind putting something together for me? Same deal. First week of training, I was like, mate, this sucks. I feel like a bitch. Like, why am I lifting this? And he's like, he said exactly the same thing. He's like, dude, trust it. He's like, 4 weeks time, you're going to feel like fucking death. And he was right.
He was right.
I was fucked after that.
And just staying on, just quickly staying on the topic of deloads. So again, for you or I, we kind of know what to look out for, but for someone that has no idea when it's time for a deload, what are some of the characteristics that they should be looking for mentally and physically in regards to when they should take a deload before it's too late? Because I reckon a lot of people fuck it up in terms of pushing themselves past that kind of point where they should have taken a deload, and then that's 100%. When you get those niggles, the injuries, or you just fucking just don't
want to
go to
gym. I mean, there's heaps of things that could happen if you push past that. I mean, obviously fatigue and you know, injuries are definitely like a big chance if you do start to push that envelope a little bit more. A serious decrease in performance is pretty much the main thing. If things start to feel heavy when they've previously not felt heavy, it's probably a good opportunity to take some time and just pull volume back a little bit to try and manage that fatigue and get some more recovery under your belt. Because basically the idea behind a deload is to allow fatigue to dissipate. So, I mean, that's the sort of thing that you're going to be more in tune with the longer that you train for. The more you track your training so that you can sort of see the amount of volume that you can get through before you start to feel like ass. But I guess, you know, other things can, you know, it can be as small as like mental, like brain fog and like those sorts of things. Like your session's taking fucking way too long to get through, you know, rest
lack periods. Lack of motivation.
Yeah, 100%. You don't go to the gym anymore, you're not enjoying it. All those sorts of things can be a good indication that it might be time for just to, you know, take your foot off the pedal for a little bit.
And what are you more of a fan of in regards to the deloads? Is it reducing, like, is it dropping a set and keeping the same intensity? Is it reducing the intensity and keeping the volume up a little bit? Like, what, or is it kind of case by case?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit more case by case, particularly when you consider somebody's goals in that regard. So with obviously clients that have more of a powerlifting specific focus, you know, I'd be more inclined to look at keeping intensity or load, but dropping volume.
So, and is that a central nervous system type
thing? Well, I guess it depends on where they are in terms of the proximity to their comp.
But, right,
you know, if someone's starting to get a little bit fatigued and they're sort of 5 or 6 weeks out, it's not going to make a lot of sense to pull all that load away from them so that they have a week of not lifting anything heavy.
Yeah.
You know, so I'd rather give them, like, you know, maybe one or two heavy singles, but then give them next to no back off volume.
Okay, yeah.
So that they're still getting that sort of higher load stimulus. And that's a, you know, a little bit of specificity in terms of training effect, but then not having to make them work so hard after.
Yeah, the overall workload is dropping down a bit,
Whereas when it comes to hypertrophy, really, that's personal preference. I mean,
More often 100%.
I'm probably just going to pull a set or two sets or even a couple of reps off each stuff or off each set, and then look to build up again from there.
Yeah. And so I know before, like, before we started the podcast today, you mentioned that at the moment training is probably not like your number one priority, but obviously you went from, I guess, more of a hypertrophy and strength based style of training to now incorporating a lot more powerlifting type stuff. So how did you find that whole transition from training, and what is, what does your training look like now? Let's say, for example, you were really knuckling down with the training, what would it look, a typical week look like?
Well, I guess it's hard to give that a black and white answer, because at the end of last year, I did 2 powerlifting meets back to back. So that was basically 6 months of prep without sort of any break. I think there was a week off in between where I was in Noosa getting flogged on a beach. But
is that active escapes yet?
Yeah, that was arguably the hardest week of my life.
That works well when you've been powerlifting and doing
Never been so sore in my life. Like, we woke up after the first day and I was like, I'm not going to make seven days. Yeah, I mean, I guess when you think about powerlifting and the journey from sort of start to finish in terms of like the start of a prep to meet day, there's a an inverse relationship between intensity and volume, basically. So I guess the start of a prep, you're looking at plenty of volume, not a great deal of intensity or load, and then gradually over time, intensity increases, volume decreases.
Right?
So I guess the majority of powerlifting training and programming ends up being more linear.
Linear progression,
the way it works.
Yeah.
There are still elements of sort of undulating periodization within that.
Okay.
You know, again, it's not going to make sense to do 2 heavy deadlift days a week
because
that's going to kill you. But I mean, obviously the closer to a meet you get, the more specific lifting becomes. So I guess accessory work becomes more and more specific, as well as less voluminous in terms of how much of it you're doing. Whereas earlier on in the prep, heaps and heaps of volume. I guess much closer to a bodybuilding style training program, with obviously still a large emphasis on main lifts or accessories of main lifts, just to practice positioning and I guess form good habits for those main lifts for when you're under more pressure or more load later in the prep.
Couple questions out of that. So first one, did you find that in terms of muscle mass and the way you actually looked, obviously your nutrition may have changed around a little bit, did you find that there was much of a difference between going from more hypertrophy based training to the powerlifting? And secondly, could you give us an example of like what an accessory movement may be that is going to help your squat or your bench or your deadlift for someone that may be wondering what the fuck that even means?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So to answer the first question, so I competed in 2 powerlifting meets last year. The first of which I competed in the 105, the 105 kilo class. Now, I typically sit around anywhere from sort of 98 to 100 kilos.
Yeah.
If I'm not overly strictly tracking my macros.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, enjoying my diet, which is great. So, you know, obviously that prep, I pretty much had no limitations. I would have to eat a lot of food to push my weight above 105 on a consistent basis.
So you have to be above 105?
No, I had to be under.
Oh, so 105 was comfortable.
So for me, that prep was simple in regards to the fact that like food was not, you know, an issue.
A factor,
I could pretty much eat whatever I wanted, to be fair.
Yeah.
yeah, like I said, I would have to eat a lot of food consistently to, you know, get close to pushing my weight above 105. So in terms of that, food was, you know, not a problem. You know,
yeah.
And if anything, I was encouraged to eat more than I would normally.
Okay, yeah.
So Friday night pizzas became pretty frequent.
Yeah.
But in terms of the way that I looked, there's definitely, I mean, probably not as much volume as a typical hypertrophy program that I would put myself through.
Yeah.
I mean, when I first, you know, got into fitness, I used to put myself through like crazy volume workouts. Mm. I mean, I look back on some of them now and I just think like, how did I do that for so long?
Yeah.
Whereas when it comes to powerlifting and like the big lifts, they're far more taxing on the body.
Yeah.
So even though I'm not getting through quite as much volume at those lower percentages, as you would like bodybuilding and, you know, doing those sort of like isolation movements or machine based work, I found it, you know, every bit as difficult to recover, if not more difficult to recover.
Yeah.
But at the same time, because rest periods tend to be so long,
yeah,
there's definitely nowhere near as much of a pump as what you might get when you train for hypertrophy. So I do find that when I'm training with lots of volume and doing, you know, lots of supersets and going through, you know, 30 to 50 set workouts, I tend to look better, more consistently, simply because I feel like I'm training.
Did you lose muscle mass?
I don't think I lost muscle mass, certainly not the 105s.
Yeah.
But then on the flip side, the comp after that, it was like a team challenge at the end of the year. So Paragon entered a team.
Okay.
And we looked at who else had entered, and there was an absolute monster competing in the 105. So I was like, well, I'm no chance of beating that dude.
Yeah.
It's Nick Walters, if you know him. I actually went to school and played cricket against him for quite a while. But he is one strong human being now, and we just decided, you know, that would be at best a second place.
Okay.
But in the 94s, I was probably a better chance of winning.
Right.
So we made the decision that I would diet down to 94s.
Okay.
Which is obviously somewhat less than what I was before. So at the 105 comp, I ended up competing. So
basically, had to lose around 5 kgs.
Yeah, so I actually competed at 102.5.
Right.
Yeah, so I ended up having to lose, you know, like substantial almost amount. Yeah, like about 9 kilos.
Shit.
So obviously had to, you know, start dieting and tracking my macros pretty consistently in that regard. So that meant that food then became far more of an issue.
Yeah.
Obviously one of the biggest challenges with dieting, particularly with powerlifting, is obviously performance.
Yeah.
So it became very important as to when I would eat in regards to when I would train.
Like your macronutrient timing become more important.
100%. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, normally I wouldn't be a huge proponent of worrying about when you're eating, you know, your macros.
Yeah,
When you're eating to hit your macros, outside of making sure you get a good pre-workout meal in to ideally have a good session.
Fuel the workout, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But obviously during that prep, far more important than the previous one, whereas I felt the previous one I had so much energy just on hand from eating at a surplus.
Didn't necessarily matter as much.
Yeah. I could train at 6 a.m. and still be relatively strong.
Yeah.
Whereas the second one, you know, it was almost like I had to train after 1 p.m. because until that point in time, I just felt like an absolute bitch. You know,
Did it feel similar to a prep for a physique show?
I never got to the stage where I was like, you know, lightheaded or like dragging my feet in the gym. My calories, I mean, I guess my body weight still being at 93, 94, 95 kilos. I mean, it meant that I'd never had to dip below, I think, 2,600 calories.
Yeah.
So still reasonable in terms of how much food I was having. But being in a, you know, deficit for 12 weeks still takes its toll.
And as training loads increase.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, plus the other thing that, you know, I learned very quickly was that your leverages change as well.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, at the end of the day, like, basically more weight moves more weight, right? The heavier
especially
you are.
Especially on the pushing exercise.
100%. The heavier you are, the easier it is to lift more weight.
Yeah.
Know? So all of a sudden I found that if I, you know, hit a squat in the slight, you know, like ever so slightly wrong position, it was so much harder.
Yeah.
So like a lot of that focus was on execution.
Yeah.
During
it's interesting, isn't it?
Rather than just getting, you know, aggro and just hitting a squat as hard as I could type
thing. Yeah.
So, I guess that's, you know, a great lead up to the accessory question because, you know, a lot of accessory movements are there to help you sort of nail positioning throughout a lift.
Yeah.
So you can be in the strongest possible position.
Yeah.
And obviously the more you can practice that position, the better opportunity you'll have to execute at those high percentages.
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So I guess one of my favorite examples would be for the deadlift, a pause deadlift, basically.
Okay.
Sort of pausing, you know, 3 to 6 inches off the floor throughout the lift.
Yeah.
So lift, literally picking the weight up, pausing 3 to 6 inches off the floor, holding that position for a 1 or a 2 count, and then finishing off the lift, ensuring that when you are pausing, you're actually getting your torso in the position that you want to be and getting that immediate feedback as to whether or not you're in the right position.
Right.
Because if you aren't, typically what happens is you'll either get pulled forward because the weight is too far out in front of you, or you'll be in too upright a position, in which case you've started using your back a little bit prematurely throughout the lift.
Okay.
And then obviously then finish off the lift. But by incorporating that sort of a movement into your program, when it comes time to actually pulling a proper deadlift, because you practice that position, ideally over time you get better at executing a proper deadlift
and
where you need to be throughout the lift in order to pull efficiently.
Would you typically find that if you were to hit a weight where you were like touch and go whether you're going to make it, that would be the point where you'd be struggling to get past anyway? Did it help in that regard?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at a powerlifting prep, every single session is an opportunity to practice execution so that on the day you have every opportunity to execute to the best of your ability.
Yeah.
So I don't think like doing a pause deadlift, for instance, will be the difference between like hitting a third attempt and not.
Yeah.
But it is the sort of thing that will best prepare you for that third attempt.
Yeah.
Because if you have got your positioning down and you know where you need to be, then basically you're going to be able to use the muscles that you need to use in order to pull through or have every opportunity to pull that lift.
Yeah.
For instance, with the pause deadlift, typically what you want to see for a conventional deadlift, for instance, is pulling up towards the mid shin without your torso becoming any more upright than it was throughout the lift. So that then as you continue on from the pause, you can lock your knees, quickly follow the hips through and use your glutes at the top of the rep.
Right.
Whereas what you like often see when a conventional deadlift breaks down at a higher load is that the knees will shoot back prematurely, effectively sort of turning into a stiff leg deadlift. And then but you know, when you're talking about hitting a one rep max, specifically something that you've never hit before, good luck stiff leg deadlifting, all right?
Game over,
So by practicing that position, ideally when it comes crunch time, you can hold that position and actually use your glutes at the top of the rep rather than cooking them from the out.
So were the accessories that you found helped work best, were they basically variations of that lift? Or did you find, for example, like with the deadlift, was there any, or even the squat, was there any other movements that you were doing that weren't a squat variation that were helping the squat? Or like a bench press, were you doing any tricep exercise that you felt helped with the lockout?
Of course. Obviously, the majority of the programming around is around those three lifts, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
There's not a lot of hypertrophy work, particularly the closer you get to comp, that isn't in there for a reason. Every exercise in there has a purpose. There's no real filler exercises.
Yeah.
You know, like there's never a point where you get to, you know, writing a powerlifting program and go, well, fuck, there's only four or five exercises here. Why don't we just throw some shrugs in? You know?
Yeah.
It's not going to happen because it's just not necessary.
Not necessary.
It's all about managing fatigue and managing load and managing recovery over time and getting enough training stimulus to get stronger over time, but also being able to recover for your next session. So, yeah, there's obviously a lot of tricep work in there to help with pressing, and there's a lot of lower body hypertrophy work to help with pushing and pulling. But there isn't necessarily a lot of bicep curls.
Yeah.
There isn't necessarily a lot of hanging leg raises for ab hypertrophy.
There's
a lot of functional core strength type stuff that might help with bracing throughout the main lifts.
Yeah.
But when it comes to sort of the way you look, not much.
Not so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
I feel as though now it's becoming more and more common for physique athletes to almost be adopting like a hybrid between powerlifting or at least like high load, low volume strength training. And the hypertrophy work. So do you find that can be an effective way to still look phenomenal on stage but still have a focus on performance side of things in the gym? Or if you were to compete again on stage, would you edge things back towards just a higher volume program? And
I think there's definitely merit to incorporating some heavier stuff in your programming. I don't think you'd ever look at getting so heavy that you consider hitting a powerlifting meet at the same time, but I think there's definitely merit going back on the point that we touched on previously, in that getting stronger will also help you get bigger,
because
by getting stronger at whatever it is you're doing, ultimately when it comes to those higher working sets of the 10s and 12s, you're going to be lifting more weight there too, which is going to mean volume increases more dramatically over time. I think, talking shit before about how my training isn't a huge priority at the moment, but the way that I'm sort of approaching things at present is exactly what you're talking about, that sort of power building term that you hear thrown around these days, typically the first lift or two in my session will be more strength orientated. So it might be a squat, bench, deadlift, or a variation of one of those lifts before I then get more into the bodybuilding side of things.
Yeah, the higher volume sets and stuff. Yeah,
exactly. So there's, I guess, that sort of like higher training stimulus, which sort of really, I guess, switches the central nervous system on and gets you working at a higher intensity and higher frequency. And then you get that opportunity afterwards to essentially chase a pump in a controlled manner that you can obviously track over time.
Yeah, bloody oath. Oh, a couple more questions before we wrap it up. I often get asked the question, like, what, whether it be podcasts, books, seminars, or just YouTube videos and shit like that for people to look at that they want to upskill their knowledge on, whether it be training or nutrition. Do you have sources or websites and blogs and stuff? Obviously, yours that I'll have a link to in the show notes, but is there anyone that you kind of still get knowledge from now and look up to or have taken knowledge from in the past?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's always like the main guys that would, you know, be considered to be in the evidence-based community. I think some of the best examples of that are people like Brett Contreras, you know, Lane Norton puts out a lot of good stuff, Eric Helms, all the guys from 3DMJ, Brad Schoenfeld, James Krieger, all those guys that do a lot of the science themselves and actually write about it. And then as far as YouTube is concerned, I don't think there's anyone better than Jeff Nippard at the moment.
Man, the videos, so fucking good.
Dude, the videos he puts out, I don't know how long they take him.
Yeah.
But and they're all fucking quality. It's obviously like a full-time job for him now.
Yes. Yeah. Awesome. Nuts.
Yeah, absolutely. But nuts. Yeah, his videos are incredible and they all touch on like legit stuff, you know? It's not just like bullshit.
It's not just there for views. It's it's like a knowledgeable video.
100%. Yeah, so he is awesome. And then I guess I've got to suggest my upcoming project, which is My Physique.
Yeah.
Has an extensive...
So I was going to touch on next, yeah.
Yeah, so it has an extensive blog section, which hopefully we'll see some people like Brett Contreras be involved with in the future as well.
Sweet. So are you able to give us any idea of what it's going to involve?
Yeah, absolutely, man.
And also like where people can keep an eye out for it.
Absolutely. Myphysique.io is the Instagram username. It's also the website, which is kind of handy.
Cool.
My Physique is going to be... essentially a sort of a low ticket coaching product whereby it is the product for people that can't afford an actual coach.
Yeah.
So it's a macro based coaching engine, fitness diary and training program.
Yeah.
So it allows
app based
to,
or
yeah, or so on, okay. App and desktop.
Sick.
Yeah. So that's it's cool. Been it's been about 15 to 18 months in development so far.
Yeah.
And basically allows the user to sign up, get their macros calculated for them, check in each week, and have their macros tweaked, changed in real time so that they can carry on progressing towards their goal.
Unreal.
Yeah, whilst also obviously accessing a training program that they want to be following,
which will
obviously push them forward to their goal, or closer to their goal, in a manner that also allows them to track their training volume and, you know, do all the stuff that we're talking about today.
Yeah, cool. And so if they jump on either the Instagram or the website, they'll be able to keep up to date. It's not launched yet.
No. April 1.
Okay.
April 1. Yeah. So just
a busy few weeks ahead of you then.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, we're getting pretty close now. But I guess I'm part of the team with all this stuff. So it's not essentially my product, but there's going to be a lot of opportunities to...
Fantastic.
So access a lot of different sort of exclusive content from some pretty big names as well. So
fantastic.
Very exciting.
Well, Legend, appreciate you coming on the show today for round two. It's been fun.
Mate, round two is, I think it was better than round one. I hope it was better.
It was better for sure, mate. Fuck, I can't even listen to myself speak in the first 12 months.
Oh yeah, I can imagine. I look back on some of the stuff that I used to do years ago and I just think,
oh, it's painful.
Why the fuck would anyone watch, listen to, or follow me?
When people contact me now and go like, I've just found your podcast, can't wait to go through all the episodes, I'd say like, maybe start at about 50 and just go forward from there. Don't worry about all the other ones.
I know. I've got the same deal with whenever I produce YouTube content.
Yeah.
I've got like the films and edits for me now. And he's like, do you want to watch it before I post it? I'm like, no fucking way.
No chance.
It's already been hard enough to actually talk into a camera. Just post it. I don't want to hear myself talk in a camera because no doubt.
It's hard to watch or listen back
to. Yeah, exactly. I know. Other people can listen to it, watch it, go for it.
Go for it,
I don't fucking see it. Fuck that.
Well, guys, thanks heaps for tuning in today. If you've enjoyed the episode and taken some value from it, which I'm sure you have, make sure you take a screenshot of today's episode and post it up on your Instagram story. Tag myself, tag Nick, I'll have all the links to his socials and website and everything in the show notes below. But we'd love to hear your feedback, and who knows, we might do another one in 6-12 months time. We'll see how the program's going, or next time I'm in Sydney or you're in Melbourne. But guys, if you haven't hit that subscribe button already, please do. And again, Nick, thanks for coming on the show, man.
Pleasure, man. Thanks for having me.